You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a Next Generation podcast where we discuss everything Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is First Duty. I'm Colin from Warwickshire.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Take two, boys. Should we explain that?
No.
We have to. We have to explain it because I've been hassled on Twitter as to why we're not outputting episodes on a regular basis. So we do need to explain this, Lou.
Okay, go on then.
Well, it turns out James actually is not a real doctor. Lying to us the whole time, so we had to investigate it. And it turns out none of what I just said is true. Actually, we lost our previous recording. Oh, I can't say we lost all of it. We did get 23 seconds of it, but then it was gone.
Was it 23 seconds or 23 minutes?
No, it was 23 seconds. That thing popped out in 23 seconds.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I had no idea.
That's not even the opening segment, then.
Exactly. We never got that far. We never got to anything. But MP3 Skype recorder said it was working just fine. So I don't know. It was even building up the bytes, but somehow it just died. But, yeah. You know.
And then we had the fiasco of trying to line everyone back up again.
and Christmas, right? So we first attempted this before Christmas, before the New Year, and
yes.
Today is the 19th of January.
Yes.
I assume this is going to go out relatively unedited and as soon as possible.
It will go out unedited, just like it is. I'll just put the bumper stuff in, and it's done. I want to get this out. So it'll probably go up here. Well, we're going to record another show, and then I'd say within 5 hours it's going up.
Excellent. So hopefully no one's going to hassle me anymore on Twitter.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too sure about that, but whatever.
Yeah. That's true.
Or at least for this.
One will hassle you about this particular episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, what's funny about it is I still have our ratings from the first time. So.
So Lou, we were emailing obviously earlier today, and you said, look, we're going to have to re-record, have to re-bring our thoughts to the table, and we'll all have to be surprised about the ratings we give. Now, I keep my notes as I watch the episode in OneNote, and the thing that happens is that as we discuss it throughout the show, I remove them from OneNote, and then it gets saved over, and then it just disappears. So by the end of the time that we finish recording, I have no bullet points, I have no notes left. So I don't know what I mentioned last time, and I certainly don't remember what rating I gave this last time. So just hold on to that piece of paper, and then see whether or not I'm even consistent on my rating second time round.
See, this is going to be interesting because I use Pages, and as soon as we finished, I deleted it off Pages.
Yeah.
I don't know what I put last time either.
Really? Because, I mean, I have a Word document of this, and I just, you know, it was already saved. And for me, what's weird about it is I'm looking at notes that were, you know, done, 4 or 5 weeks ago, if not longer.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Probably about 5 or 6 weeks ago, yeah.
Yeah, and what's weird is the notes that I have here and my memories of the episode as I watched it back then, they don't make sense to each other. But, you know, so you know how I start my captain's log thing. Well, I don't even know why I would have wrote it like that, but I think I'd probably skip that and just go into the review. So anyway. All right. Well, Colin, thank you for being a good sport about coming on and doing it again.
No problem. I know all the problems and trials and tribulations of podcasting, so
yes,
no problem at all.
Cool, because the next one we record won't even go out for another half a year.
don't say that. That's not...
You know, I give up my temporal secrets.
Yeah, but so. this time it's proper time travel that's going on, that's happening next.
Yeah, right. Yes. All right, Colin, whenever you're ready.
Okay. The synopsis for tonight's show is, following an accident during a Starfleet Academy training exercise that leads to the death of one of his friends, Wesley Crusher must decide whether loyalty or truth is the first duty. This is the 19th episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is March the 30th, 1992, written by Ronald D. Moore and Naren Shankar, directed by Paul Lynch. Oh, that'd be funny. Guest stars include Robert Duncan McNeil as Nicholas Locarno, Ed Lauter as Commander Albert, Richard Fancy as Saitek, and later the Sky Spirit. Jacqueline Brooks as Admiral Brand, Will Wheaton as Wesley Crusher. Isn't it weird Will Wheaton being a guest?
Yeah.
Anyway, Walker Brand as Hajar. And finally, Shalom Phil as Satu, who pops up in Lower Decks.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you think about this episode? Me personally, I think it's got some good points, got some bad points, but it's an enjoyable episode to watch. So, I quite happily watched it again.
There you go. I do like the episode. I mean, there's a lesson to be learned. It's not the best, but you know, we have Wesley again, and this time he's just not the way he used to be. We have Tom Paris, who comes back, or who actually is in a different form. And I guess the reason is the person who wrote it would have... Is it true, Colin, do you think that the person who wrote First Duty would get royalties every time Tom Paris' name is used or Nick Locarno's name is used in the Voyager?
That is one of the reasons, apparently, that he was recast, so to speak. But Robert Duncan McNeil has also done interviews at various cons and get asked that question a lot, and he actually says in his opinion that two different people anyway.
I see.
Because the personality traits are slightly different.
Very slightly different. They both make mistakes that... Yeah, they both make mistakes that resulted in a death, but yet I think Paris had more deaths, not just one. So I think it was two. Yeah.
I think the thing you pointed out as well is... Locarno is basically all out for himself, whereas Paris has a tough exterior but a soft interior.
Yeah. So this is okay. I like the Picard's speech. His lesson to be learned. Does Wesley do the right thing? And I think this is where, if I remember correctly, we all might have had different opinions on whether Wesley did the right thing or the wrong thing. So we'll get there. James, what about you?
Well, now, I seem to remember, like, prior to our last conversation, I used to think I didn't like this episode. Then I'm pretty sure that in my memory, I thought that this episode was really good when I last reviewed it, going back, like, 6 weeks or so. But then since then, I think during the conversation we had, I called on it, and then I'm not entirely sure where I'm landing now. So it's a little bit of a strange one. However, overall, I think this is a nice show. One thing I think I noticed this time more than last is that this really does get carried by the guest stars, right? You mentioned that this is Wesley Crusher guest starring, and obviously it's Tom Paris, or the actor that plays Tom Paris, again, guest starring. So I found that interesting. But yeah, it was certainly an enjoyable watch, an enjoyable rewatch.
Okay.
They've done that before, though. I mean, if the Next Generation episode, the guy, Gul Masset, becomes Gul Dukat.
That's true.
So yeah, they've done it there before.
Okay, so the ship is heading back for graduation ceremonies that Wesley is. Was Wesley supposed to actually graduate this year?
No, I don't think so. I think that this was, obviously every year some classes graduate, but I always interpret Starfleet Academy as having, like, you know, similar to a university, having, like, you know, 3-4 years or so of cadets. And I think, well, at this point, right, he's in the, I suppose he's, is he coming to the end of the first year or is he coming to the end of his second year? I don't quite know. But yeah, not graduating.
Well, he left in season 2 or maybe early 3, so yeah, he would have been a couple of years. But I, just as soon as I asked that and you started answering, I remembered it's because Picard is going to be like the key address. He's going to be doing his speech during the
graduation. He's given the address this year. That's right.
Yes, that's the reason why they're going there. Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, he's the captain of the Federation flagship, so let's drag him all the way back from the frontier to give a speech.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah, Everybody wants to hear from him.
Nothing better to do.
Nothing at all.
And he can't come on his own. He has to bring the entire crew and the Federation flagship with him.
Well, hang on. Would you really put Captain Picard in a shuttle also and send him back? I mean, that's just asking for trouble.
Exactly. Yes. Every time he gets in a shuttle, separated from the ship, something bad has to happen.
I'm sure they could have docked at some space station somewhere that has, a ship that goes back to Earth now and again.
Or why don't they just Skype him in?
Yes, space guys.
So I've been watching a lot of Discovery recently. Are you saying a bit like they have on Discovery, just have him appear as a hologram?
But they can't do holograms in TNG, man, because it hasn't been invented.
Well, I mean, these things are... What's been invented and what hasn't been invented is rather fluid, according to Star Trek canon. Yeah,
changes every week. But anyway, okay. So, the ship's making its way back to Earth to take part of the Academy ceremony, with Picard playing the Grand Poobah, and I'm sure Wesley will be proud. While we're driving there, let's discuss Academy superintendents. Will had a Vulcan, who was like having your parents around. Do you think that would be true? Do you think a logical Vulcan is like having your parents around?
I don't think it'd be like having your parents around, but obviously they would look at everything with a logical angle. So to Riker, who basically wants the party, it would seem like a parental figure.
Riker likes to party or get it on with the girls. What do you think Riker was like in the Academy? Every woman's dorm or what?
But I thought Riker as a cadet, right, and certainly as an ensign, given the events of like the Pegasus and stuff, I thought he was super serious and, you know, much more focused on duty making. Making captain, making admiral, that kind of thing. So I thought it's only really since he joined the Enterprise that he kind of mellowed out a bit more. He turned down Troy, right? To keep going on his career. That doesn't sound like a party animal.
Very good point. You're right. Yeah, he ended their relationship because his career was more important.
Oh. I mean, if anything, from this episode, it sounds like Picard was more of a party animal. Who barely got out of the academy.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Picard was a party animal, and Will was a straight loose, and boy, they turned around. So Picard's superintendent was a Betazoid, full telepath. So when he got called to the office, and apparently he must have got called to the office, he knew exactly what he had done wrong.
Yeah, I kind of felt that at this point Picard almost was about to lean over to Troy and go, no offense.
Yeah, no kidding.
Just,
Would that just be fair to have a telepath scanning you without permission?
You know, it's interesting. It would almost be like a radio picking up as a signal.
Yeah, I've never quite worked out whether or not they have the, do they have the ability to turn away or not pick up what's going on in people's minds? I suppose it's a bit like, staring versus seeing,
Yeah, well, does the episode, I can't remember it now, Tin Man. And Deanna says that some Bytosaurs are born with a telepathy turned on straight away. So, whereas she says most of them develop in puberty. So, and she said they have training and stuff like that. So I'd presume that training would be the ability to filter out background noise, so to speak.
I mean, if there's ever a stage of one's life where you don't want to start hearing what other people are thinking, it's probably during puberty, right?
Oh, gotcha. You don't want to be broadcasting what's going on in your head during puberty, do you?
Yeah, I mean, you might be self-conscious enough as it is, but without hearing everyone else's opinion on you, I think that would be pretty harsh.
Yeah, I don't know if I really want to hear everybody's thoughts of me today, in fact. But here's a question, though. Didn't Luoxana have the ability to read people's mind on the planet or something? Troy used to say she could feel emotions from people on a planet or on a different ship. How do they do that?
Well, she was an empath one week and a telepath the next week. She was whatever the scriptwriters needed her to be in regards to Troy. But I suppose because she's an empath, she's picking up on emotions. So if you're getting that overwhelming planet-wide emotion, then that would be easy to pick up on.
Well, actually, Lou, you just reminded me. I think going back many years, I know we had the exchange where I said, look, I don't think this works because there's telepathy through the vacuum of space. And then I corrected myself and I went, well, actually, you could have just ended it after telepathy because I don't think that works full stop either.
No, so, of course not.
I don't exactly know. You have that to suspend your disbelief here.
Okay.
Well, science fiction.
It is, definitely. Well, the Academy is calling, wanting to know what their ETA is, and of course they're clipping along at warp 2 or something like that. We'll be there when we get there. And that's when they discuss the superintendents. But the Academy calls back, and apparently there was an accident. Mr. Crusher is dead. You see? Things can go your way sometimes. I'm kidding. He's not dead. But there was an accident. Wesley's hurt, but he's going to be just fine. At least, physically.
What is the implication being that the mental scars will be there for life?
Well, at least for a while until he joins up with somebody from his past, which is in the future.
He's going to be mentally scarred anyway from wearing them jumpers.
The rainbow suit.
Is that the jumper that he handed over to Josh Albert, by the way?
Yes.
So, where did they go? They went to somewhere in Canada, right? I said, well, he didn't have his jumper, so I gave him all of these rainbow shirts to get them out of my suitcase.
Yeah, well...
Calgary. They went to Calgary.
Calgary. Well, there will be an investigation of the accident, which a Starfleet cadet, Joshua Albert, did lose his life while colliding with another cadet's ship. And here's an interesting question. I don't remember if we discussed this. They go to the Academy where the Admiral is discussing the investigation, who's going to be in the investigation. There are only 5 spectators. The dead boy's father, Picard and Dr. Crusher.
Yeah.
Picard and Dr. Crusher and 2 unnamed people. So do you think somebody just didn't have enough time to be there?
Well, there's no Bajorans.
Yeah, so the Bajoran lady, her parents are, I don't know, would it be characterizing her in a negative light to suggest that they probably died in a labor camp? So are you expecting them to turn up?
That is true. Yeah, of course, we don't know anything about the labor camp at this point, do we?
No.
No. We have had the Ensign Row episode. And there is at least a suggestion that there's, you know, that there are refugees scattered.
Yeah, she mentions refugee camps, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't think she actually uses the word labor camp there, does she?
No. But I don't think you're given the impression that all is well on the home world.
Yeah, so that would take, I mean, obviously, we also know that Bajor is on the edge of Federation space. So, you know, they might not be able to get a ride, shall we say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, still, you would think at that point, the Cardassian rule is still going on. Because, you know, Picard said it in Ensign Row, there's really not much we could have done about it. It all occurred within the Cardassian border.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Picard offers the full resources of the Enterprise to help with this investigation.
Yeah, because the Enterprise has got far better equipment than Starfleet.
Probably does. Updated holodecks. Okay. So, let's see here. Hold
on. Did you mention Wesley's... what's it? Recovery regime with that weird thing on his arm?
Yeah, he's just stretching his arm out, making sure that his muscles are going to come back. I'm not entirely sure.
It's actually attached to the arm that's injured, and he's pulling on the arm that's injured.
Well, so how would he have injured that, by the way? Because to me, it's like this is a bit weird because there's a huge explosion and he manages to get out in time. Okay, so that's good. To me, the only states that Wesley could have existed in is either he got out in time and he's fine, or he didn't and he blew up. So I don't quite see where the, but I hurt my arm, fits in. I mean, maybe as he beamed across, he happened to land on his arm. Or maybe as he tried to leave the transporter room and to head back to, head back to his room, he accidentally hit his arm. Maybe it's completely unrelated from the accident.
No, you know what it is? His door is a manual door in his academy room, and he's not used to manual doors. So we probably walked into the door.
Maybe.
Then it's been on for a long time. No, I think it happened during the collision. Obviously, he got jolted pretty damn good, and his arm probably blasted one of those consoles right next to him, and he was still able to get out, but I think that's what that was.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you can never be too careful of exploding consoles.
Yeah, you know, they've killed a few people in the past. Okay, so here's my diatribe. Do you remember me going on about this? Here's the part I couldn't stand. Okay.
Go on.
No matter what series or situation, inserting futuristic tech noises where there shouldn't be one in the least. Okay, so you mentioned his dorm room that he walks into. You have to... To get into the room, you have to knock. The person has to go to the door, open it by the handle, which goes when you open it, and then worse, just as bad as that, when the door closes, you hear again. What was your reason why?
So I don't remember my reason why, but I remember not caring last time we had this, or not even noticing last time.
It's the locking gauging.
And then we had you had your big rant about it, and then I rewatched the episode even today, and I still didn't even notice. So it did nothing for me.
That is funny. It just makes no sense because, you know, you look at the door as it opens, you see the little knob that, you know, latches to the wall. That doesn't look futuristic. It looks like one I've got right next to me in my door here. And so it just...
Well, you've got a futuristic knob there, Lou.
I do have a futuristic knob. But then it happens on Voyager. When the doctor pulls a couple carts, you're... Why? It's a wheel!
True. It's all true.
Good.
They haven't got any WD-40 at Academy. That's all it is.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. But, I mean, you know, the cadet doesn't deserve a door chime. You know, something.
You no, it's back to basics, isn't it? Because, this is the Academy. This is going back to basics. This is starting from scratch. You don't get no luxuries. This in the future is rough, isn't it?
But I'm actually surprised Wesley got his own room, because that's pretty luxurious, right, for a campus.
Well, technically, he holds a commission of ensign, doesn't he? Because he got a field commission.
Maybe.
That's what it is.
Because even on the Excelsior, right? You know, people were bunking together, and there's Wesley with his nice large room with multiple feet. I assume he's got an ensuite there and a shower in the corner. A sonic shower.
Or maybe it's because he's in Nova Squadron.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, there you go. Or he might have a roommate. Maybe it's Ensign Sito.
Or maybe it's the guy that died.
There you go.
Oh, that's it. Put a happy gloss on things.
I tried. He's the one that went negative.
So do you think the Enterprise on the desk is Wesley's or his dead roommate then?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't think it's Wesley's. He probably picks it up and plays like aeroplanes with it.
With his good arm.
Yes, with his good arm. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. Or maybe he pretends to be Captain Ensign Picard. Warp drive. Engage. Anyway, that would make no sense.
So okay. I think I pointed out last time, I mean, when obviously Tom Paris, or who I will continue to call Tom Paris, turns up to talk to Wes. I mean, it's very clear that Tom is looking extremely dodgy. And, you know, he does this very quick thing about, I'm holding up okay, but never lost anyone under my command. And as far as I can tell, he doesn't look really that bothered at all. And then very, very quickly, as if there isn't any more suspicion that could be laid upon them, it's like, Mom, Picard, out, please.
It's very suspicious. Oh, yeah.
Actually, throughout this episode, how stupid is Crusher, as in Dr. Crusher? See, she doesn't pick up on any of this, right? She goes to the hearings. She hears all of the baloney that is spouted. She hears that clearly, at best, negligent. And, you know, she sits down with her son a little bit later and says, oh, look, in the courtroom when they presented evidence, it appeared that you were lying. We can't have this. How can they besmirch you in this way? I mean, how does she not cotton on to the fact that the problem isn't with the system, but it's with Wesley?
All right. Even when they figure it out, you know, later down the road when they have proof that they're lying. Well, Wesley, there has to be something wrong here. I know you're telling the truth, but it looks like you're lying.
Yeah, it's like, there's not a problem with Wesley. There must be some problem with the universe.
Yeah, there you go.
And she's blinded by her mother's love.
And actually, they don't even follow up with a scene, right? With Wesley and Dr. Crusher after all is said and done. They have the Picard and Wesley interaction, but not the Dr. Crusher and Wesley interaction.
Well, yeah, but everyone knows that, man, when you really, really, really mess up, your dad tells you off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess he does, doesn't he? All right, so like we said, Picard and Wesley's mum, get it? Mum, visit him while he's doing his hand-arm exercises. And I think I remember now why that happened to him, why he was wearing that. Because masturbation does not just cause blindness. It can cause problems in your arm as well. And I think that's probably what it is.
And there goes the R rating.
There goes our R rating. It's either going to be carpal tunnel, or maybe he pulled a tendon or something.
Okay, I don't know what carpal tunnel is. I'm going to have to Google that.
It's not fun. So I'll tell you that. It's not fun. if you ever have a repetitive motion job where you do the same thing all day, you know, putting things in order or something continually throughout your shift, your hand starts to get numb. That's carpal tunnel.
They also call it repetitive strain syndrome over here.
Oh, that's what you call that. Okay, yeah. Well, that makes perfect sense. I worked at a bakery in the packaging department, you know, putting rolls into order so they can go into a bag. And, oh, it was bad. I was getting numb fingers and hands, and the doctor told me either you quit the job or you're going for surgery. So I quit the job.
That was an easy decision.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no thanks. So anyway, just as Picard and Dr. Crusher and Cadet Crusher start to get cozy and, you know, have discussions about what's going on, you hear it again, the... And this time it's Tom Paris. Okay, I'm sorry. It's Nick Locarno who needs to discuss what happened. And like you said, Mom, Captain, could you excuse us? We need to discuss some things here. Yeah, that's not suspicious in any way, is it? All right. So, time to visit the groundskeeper, Boothby. Do I remember correctly that you, one of you two, did not like my favorite Martian?
So, what's the reference to the favorite Martian?
Oh, Ray Walston played something over here called my favorite Martian.
Okay.
It's like long, long, long time ago.
Okay. I don't remember not saying anything about it because I've never heard of it.
Oh, no, I mean, it's like one of you didn't like Boothby very much.
Yeah, I didn't like Boothby at all. Or the point that I made, I think, is that in this particular episode, I'm fine with Boothby because we heard about him before when Crusher was going off to the academy and Picard told him, hey, you know, look up Boothby. And in this particular episode, there's a clearer indication that he and Picard have a bit of a relationship and almost was like a father figure to him during a hard time. And obviously Picard wouldn't have gone to his own father because, you know, that relationship wasn't there. So in terms of Boothby specifically for the Picard interaction, I'm happy with it. It's when he turns up later as a boxing coach and as the kind of like the main linchpin around which all Starfleet captains in the entire fleet revolve. I find that very hard to believe, and I always find it very lazy when they do that kind of thing.
I don't know. I do like him coming back in Voyager.
What, as the boxing coach or in 8472?
The 8472 thing. I like that.
Yeah, I never got that. I mean, why would the leader of the invasion fleet be the gardener?
It's the one they least expect, but really? I don't know. Well, I think sometimes when... I think since we last spoke, Lou, I've watched a lot more Discovery, and I also went to see the new Star Wars film. And one thing that I found, or one opinion I kind of hold, which I think is applicable to both these scenarios, is that I think when a particular series or particular stories, they try to interweave too many people, and they take, you know, Boothby from here, and they take, you know, such and such's cousin from there, and they just mesh them all together. I always find that on one hand, people like it because it's kind of like fan service and it's a bit of like a hidden Easter egg in the story. But I always find that the downside is that you're kind of like always reducing the scope of the story. You're always making things, the universe smaller. And that's something that I don't quite like. I think that there's no reason for Boothby to be Chakotay's boxing instructor.
I
think it reduces the size of the universe to have him in that role because clearly someone else would have been his boxing instructor. I mean, the guy must be 85 by the time that time Chakotay came through. So yeah, I have a hard time liking these things.
Well, hold on. To me, if the way you say he's going to be about 85 by the time Chakotay came through, that gave me hints of Rocky Balboa and his trainer Mickey And I wonder if that's what they were going for.
It's possible. It's possible. Yeah. No, I can see that. And I can... And in that particular case, it might have been a bit too tempting. But they do it elsewhere, right? Mm-hmm. They do it with, Tuvok was on the Excelsior for that one episode. Just why not? And again, I'm not entirely in love with these things.
Why, Tuvok? You need to learn to have a sense of humor. I can't do it. I'm sorry. I tried.
But on the other hand, Rand being on the Excelsior, I have no problem with whatsoever.
She was on the Excelsior.
No, I know she was. And she was on the Excelsior in Star Trek VI. Yes. So I have no problem with that. That seems to be like a natural progression. But almost, I don't know, maybe the difference is between, you writing your story and then you deciding that, X number of years later, you want to kind of tie everything together and make there only really be like four characters that intertwine throughout generations. This is one problem that I have with Discovery at the moment, with Burnham being related to the to the Spock family. That I find it hard to take. Anyway, enough moaning.
She is hard to take. I mean, there's Vulcan emotionless, and then there's Burnham emotionless. She's just way. She's got no spunk to her at all. Which, I don't know. But, I'm going to digress just a little bit. Divert, I guess you maybe want to call it. I've been giving Discovery a lot of props over the last few weeks because of some of the things they did that I really appreciated. Now, I'm a little upset with Star Trek Discovery because they just killed off their main... Doctor.
Oh, okay.
Wait.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Have you not seen it?
Actually, hang on. This issue, let me just point out the fact that, at the time of recording, Discovery has just come back. So after it's like mid-season hiatus, and basically the first thing they do on episode one is that they land, in the Mirror Universe. Now, come on. It would be nice if the Star Trek Twitter feed, the official Star Trek Twitter feed, didn't spoil it before the episode was available to watch in the UK. There's like a 12-hour delay between it being available in the US and it being available in the rest of the world. And during that time, you cannot be on Twitter without the official Star Trek Twitter feed sending out spoilers. And it's not like... hey, wasn't it interesting that Star Trek Discovery had this show today? It is literally things like, all rise for the Terran Empire. Now, how the hell can you avoid that?
It's not just the Star Trek feed, though, Dan. It's like, I literally do not go on Twitter on Sunday. Literally. Well, because as soon as it drops in America, they're all watching it and they're all tweeting about it.
No,
don't care that no one else has watched it.
Sure, but I can just about park people that are getting overexcited. But when the official feeds are coming through, and one individual getting overexcited is fine, but why they can't just shut up for 12 hours? And it's not much more than 12 hours.
Just them. There's a load of people on Twitter. As soon as they've watched it, they're on Twitter and tweeting it.
Yeah,
it's like we get the Marvel films and stuff like that before America does. We get them like a week early compared to what they do.
We do. Now,
some people go on Twitter who've watched it and started tweeting things, and they go nuts. And I'm thinking it's the same thing. I mean, a lot of people that I would follow on Twitter know, and they say they just put simple comments like, this week's episode of Discovery, brilliant. And then they wait till Tuesday and then they let rip.
Mm-hmm.
Which is brilliant, because not everyone's going to watch it straight away, and not everyone's going to watch it on Monday. So, but yeah, it is. I mean, it's the official Star Trek accounts on I think it's Facebook, Twitter, Google+, Tumblr. They all let rip as soon as Sunday comes. They all let rip.
I suppose
which
maybe
is also bad if you actually are an American, because they might let rip before you've watched it in America.
Yeah, although what I'm kind of thinking now is that I suppose we're at least getting the episode one day later. And actually, maybe that's a good thing, but also a bad thing, because in the past, we would get the episode like a year later, and it would literally be a year later.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't be on the edge of our seat for what happens next week or the week after or whatever. Yeah. But because we're following so close to the US, but we're still detached, I think we're almost in a position where it's like the worst of both worlds. So it's not so far in the, you know, the backlog that no one in the US cares about it, but it's also not at the same time of the US whereby we can actually get to the bottom of the episode before they start spoiling. So it's a funny one.
Yeah, it's like if you go all the way back to Best of Both Worlds when that first aired, if Twitter was around then,
oh yeah,
the whole of the world would have had Best of Both Worlds Part 2 ruined, because we had to wait 3 months for that after the Americans got it. So that would have been 3 months of them tweeting, Facebooking and everything else about it, and by the time it come round to the rest of the world, it would have been ruined.
That's a good point there.
Yeah.
Very good point.
But yeah, I just you know, Saturday night, log off, don't log on until I've watched it.
Yeah, that makes sense. But what bothers me on this, okay, so I hope you guys have seen it. So if I have it, plug your ears and go la 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 la. Okay, I finally gave Star Trek their props for having their first gay couple. Not only that, their main characters at the highest levels of their respected jobs. Now, they just killed off Dr. Colbert and made his partner in a consistent vegetative state. Now, I'm gonna say, as I look on Google now, supposedly the actor who plays Dr. Colbert says, "Don't write him off so soon." So I don't know what that means. Maybe,
well, the way to look at it is when they killed Michelle Yeoh, when they killed Georgia off. And everyone was like, "Oh my God, they've killed Georgia, blah, blah, blah." Michelle Yeoh said, she's not done yet. Now, when Berman got the telescope and you had the holographic recording from Georgia, everyone thought that's what Michelle Yeoh meant. But I called way back. I said, like, you know, spoilers here, people. So, James, you want to put your fingers in your ears for a bit?
I think I know where you're going.
I'm sorry, Colin, say that again.
I says way back that Ash was a Klingon. I said that'd be in the mirror universe within season one, and Georgia would be the Emperor, and I got them all right.
You seriously got that all right? I had no idea they were going to go for the mirror universe stuff.
Yeah. It was given the nature of the fact that they're trying to do a dark and gritty series, it was inevitable they would end up in the mirror universe, especially with the spore drive.
Wow.
So, and when Michelle Yeoh said she will be back, I thought, well, in that case, then she's the Emperor. And everyone thought it was like, I even had a conversation with Steve from Horizons podcast 4 days ago on the phone, and he thought that the Emperor might be Sato from Enterprise. And I said to him, I said, no, I said, it's not, it's Georgia. I said, Michelle Yeoh will come back as the Emperor. And he went, no, I'll talk to you Tuesday.
Okay, so the thing is, so Colin, I've not actually finished watching that episode yet. So the latest one that dropped, I'm like half of the way through or so. But it's very, very clear from the first episode and also for the first half here is that the way that they're referring to the Emperor is in such a way that it's clear it's a female.
Yeah.
It's just very clear. It's obvious that when you omit things that and you leave an ambiguity, it's because you're supposed to do a big reveal. And as soon as like I caught on to that fact, I was certain it was going to be Giorgio, because it makes the most sense, right? It also makes the most sense in terms of the character that the story that they have to tell with Burnham and the rest of the crew. It makes no, you know, why does what is Burnham's story if she goes to a mirror universe and finds Sato as the Empress? It means nothing. Whereas at least when you have someone from her past, a significant person in her past, that's clearly what's going to be played.
Okay. Well, I'd like to see. I mean, they are saying that he supposedly is going to come back. I'm not sure how that could be done unless they bring his mirror universe counterpart and bring him back to their universe. So, we'll see.
But one thing that I fear at the moment is that I'm a little bit confused as... To begin with, when they went with Discovery, they kind of had a very, very kind of new look of Trek, a new feel to Trek. A lot more kind of action-packed, a lot less, you know, what was traditionally Trek. And then, really, within the first half of season, they just flip it over and they go, oh, now we're in the Mirror Universe, which is like, you know, the nerdiest of nerdy parts of the Star Trek lore. And I'm just a bit I don't know what new Star Trek fans that are watching this episode for the first time are thinking, whether or not they think this is a, you know, whether or not they're accepting this Mirror Universe as being something that's valid, or whether they're thinking, well, this shows have gone a bit weird.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's going to be people watching it because it's on Netflix or CBS in America, but there are probably a lot of people around the world are watching it because it's on Netflix. So if you're just watching it because, oh, it's a sci-fi show, and you like sci-fi, then yes, some elements are going to confuse you. But they're trying to make a show to appeal to a lot of people, so I suppose they've got to put some things in to keep like us, like the fans who've been fans for like years, happy, while also trying not to overcomplicate it. So it's a bit of a juggling act, I suppose. Whereas in the movies, they've gone slightly out of context, but it still makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe someday we'll find ourselves on the Discovery podcast that we've been hearing about.
Maybe.
Let's see. Okay, let's go back to the gardener. So, the gardener is instrumental in Star Trek.
Yeah, almost everything.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Let's see here. We learned that Picard made a mistake. We don't know what it was, but it had to be a whopper, you know, for Boothby to make him face that mistake, for which he hated him for. But what was the mistake? Do you think?
I reckon that's when he got speared from his heart.
Or is it when he wrote some woman's name in Boothby's prized elm tree?
No, that wouldn't be such a major thing that he would, like, you know, be a career-defining moment.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, it's something he just made him see that it was a mistake. Be curious to know what that was.
I've always interpreted this as being like a matter of the heart. So I would imagine it's like, you know, hey, I'm going to quit Starfleet and go out with this girl that I've just met and spend the next, you know, 4 years traveling around Europe kind of thing. I didn't expect it to be anything more than just, you know, adolescence hot-headedness.
Could be. I don't think the spear in the heart would have made Boothby seem like a bitter, vicious old man.
Yeah, but the dropping out of Starfleet bit doesn't make sense either, because you've got in the best of both worlds where Picard was the first freshman to win the marathon. Now, that's drive and determination. So you haven't got that drive and determination, you wouldn't think, I'm going to drop out and travel around Europe.
Yeah, right. It was all in the legs, all that running he did. Anyway, so, must have been a whopper. Okay, so, sensor readings. What do I have about sensor readings?
Life forms. Boom, boom.
maybe it was.
No, so I think we kind of move from this into the courtroom scene, for the want of a better word, where I personally think that the cadet that's talking to the Admiral has such a bad attitude. And they start interrogating about did anyone see the collision. And one thing I noticed in particular is that throughout this episode, the Tom Paris character, he really is he's written as a very good leader in a way. So he sees that Sito, who's been put under pressure about why didn't you see anything? So I was just flying on sensors, and you can see her begin to crack, and he steps in and he takes over. It also happens a little bit later down on another kind of grilling where, as you know, it's earlier when they mentioned, did no one see anything? And then he's the first one that says, nope, we did not, as a way of kind of moving the thing on. He's actually written pretty consistently and very well throughout this episode.
But there's also the fact that they where did they find the time to do this, you know, in between all the studies and the exams and the revision and all that? Where did they find the time to rehearse, never mind plan and execute this thing? You'd think that they wouldn't have time to fly around in a display team.
Well, I would hope things like, you know, I mean, it's mentioned before, right, that they study things like Latin at the academy. I would hope that if you're on Nova Squadron, you'd be able to get out the Latin for the purpose of flying the spaceship. So maybe it's these things, you can miss certain boring classes that you don't really need. Like, you know, advanced warp theory, you don't really need it. I'm going to go on the command line, so let me go into the let me go into the shuttle piloting lessons or advanced shuttle piloting lessons instead.
Oh yeah, I bet they probably did all the simulations on the holo, whatever it's called, at the academy. So okay. So let's see. That's what I have, sensor readings. I'll remember that now.
And at this point, you start seeing, you know, they're kind of their explanation is slightly crumbling, and you know the admiral, the two admirals are kind of, actually it's one admiral and a captain, right? But you know, they're drilling into them, and you begin to see that the Paris character kind of pivots slightly and starts pushing the blame onto the dead cadet.
Yeah.
And it kind of happens in a subtle way, and it happens that, you know, he raises this possibility, and then he gets challenged on it, and then very quickly he manipulates the group to basically come forward and you know, assert that actually no, he was probably not up to the task after all. And it's done in a quite nice and subtle way that you realize that you know, this Locarno guy is he's pretty manipulative, and he does. He does have kind of, you know, quote unquote natural leadership skills in that respect.
Oh yeah, I mean he actually gets them to agree with him when they know it probably wasn't his fault. It's just happened, but he must have got scared. He tried to pull away too fast. So
yeah,
that's a good point.
And it's all done very incrementally as well. At the beginning he doesn't start and say, hey, we're going in there and going to say it's all his fault. But instead, it's incrementally done, even down to the fact that at the end, when they think that Picard sussed them out, you know, he suggests, look, he doesn't have the evidence, so, you know, we'll go in and I'll say it's this true, and he'll say no, and then we'll move on. And he's very much he's very much able to keep things going, even when obviously things are going against him.
Yeah. Well, the next day, Wesley gets to testify. And he follows his script to the letter. And, you know, and I just love the investigation, especially like the Vulcans just sitting there. He knows this guy's full of crap, but he's letting him tell his story just so he can bury himself. And that's exactly what they do. He buries himself, and they call up that NavCon picture and bam, slaps it down like Perry Mason. Mr. Crusher, are these ships in a diamond slot formation? No. You know, and I love the fact that they have explanations for everything. What's going on here, Mr. Crusher? I have no explanation. I have no idea. None of them have any idea how that happened.
And I like the way that it's written, because it is written in the perspective that when you look at what evidence Crusher gives, he doesn't technically lie. He doesn't go out of the way and lie. He And as Picard will mention at the end, he lies via omission, but he doesn't actively say that, you know, this happened when it didn't happen. It's pretty good in that respect, and they keep it consistent throughout.
Oh yeah, my 16-year-old daughter.
He takes the Fifth Amendment.
Yes, yeah, indeed,
he does. My 16-year-old daughter doesn't agree with that. A lie of omission is still a lie. I tried to use that on her. You know, she'd tell him the truth to a certain point so she can get her way, but then I said, "But you said this." Oh well, I guess we had decided that we didn't need to do that. Well then, why didn't you tell me that when you were trying to get what you want? But I told the truth. I'm like, no, you didn't. A lie of omission is still a lie. I love that. I pulled it out.
Go back and watch Star Trek.
Yes, yes. I'm gonna
saying that about watching that. Star Trek though. That they actually used this episode for fighter pilots in the United States Air Force.
Is that right? Wow.
Why?
Yeah.
Well,
because
I mean,
it's about sticking to the truth.
Ah. Okay.
I actually have to say, I think that the story, that the message that's been put across here is a very good one, and I kind of agree with it completely. I do think that you, you know, you do have a very well-written, charismatic leader who is obviously covering himself, but he's never written as a slimy guy trying to just get out of the justice that's going to be pushed there. You can kind of relate to him. You kind of know why he did what he's, why he's doing what he's doing. But at the end of the day, I think that, you know, Picard's speech is exactly right and is what anyone should really be following. Because if, you know, if you start to dabble in the greys here, all too quickly, it just doesn't, you know, if you're, it becomes much more of a cult of personality around your leadership, which I think that that's really what they're trying to avoid here. But yeah, I do like the, I really do like the message that's been put across.
Yeah, I found it in my notes. This episode is shown to the United States Air Force Academy cadets in training, citing the United States Air Force motto of "I will not lie, cheat or steal, nor tolerate those who do." The episode is used to emphasize the Academy's adherence to moral code and truth.
Wow, that's fascinating. Okay.
Actually, cool. Let me bring up one thing very quickly, because just before Wesley does give evidence, he's visited, as he's preparing his testimony, by Joshua Albert's dad.
Oh, yeah.
And right. And I think that's a great, great, really top-notch scene. And you can tell that, you know, the actor that's playing the dad, he's really, I think he's knocking out of the park. And you can see that there's a certain amount of guilt that he's carrying with him, or believes that he's carrying with him. And he has reaction shots when Paris and co start thinking that, well, maybe it was, you know, Joshua's fault that they crashed. You know, you can see him react in court to that news, and he's devastated on the inside. And I think that, now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, to a very large extent, other than Picard, this episode is entirely carried by the extras. So Joshua Albert's dad is great. The Admiral is great. Wesley's great. Tom Paris is great. And none of these people are regulars on the show. And I think that there aren't that many episodes that are really carried by, you know, by support staff. And I think they do a great job this week.
Yeah. Sito's not all that great in this one, but don't worry, she'll make up for it later.
Yeah. And they'll sort out her eyebrows as well.
There you go. Good thing. Good thing. So, everything's going to be okay, Wesley. There must be an explanation. We already discussed this. But Data and Geordi are trying to find more evidence against you, so don't worry about it. We'll take care of this. Well, she doesn't say it that way, but, you know, I don't know what she was thinking. Is she the only one that can't see clearly that he's lying? That's okay. But anyway.
Well, maybe she can see that he's lying, but she doesn't want to. Well, I mean, she's his mom, so she probably doesn't want to believe that he's lying.
Either that or try and get him out of it some way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm going to talk with Admiral Brand. No, don't do that. Stay out of it.
But in the same way, right, you kind of get the impression that, that Wesley, as a teenager, you know, from season one onwards, right, he probably hasn't really rebelled. He probably hasn't had his mum have to come in and discover, you know, whatever secrets he had and to beat him down. So maybe from Crusher's or Dr. Crusher's perspective, he is, you know, he is a, like a whiter than white character that she has no reason to you know, to question. And all that's happened is that he's been gone for a year or so at the academy, and surely that's not going to be a bad influence on him.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so, but did she not go to the academy herself? So, I mean, I would think the academy probably is. Do you think the 24th century academy would be like going to college today? You know, party all night and
I'm
barely stay
certain.
Awake during the day?
I'm almost certain of it.
That'd be funny. Oh, man, I had so much synth the hole last night. Oh, goodness. So, anyway. You know, you could use a good herbicide instead of pulling the weeds with your bare hands. And then you could also explore space on a holodeck instead of a starship. One of those two statements is true. The other is not.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned last time, and I hate this, and they do this a lot. They do this far too much. And this time around, I've actually prepared some other statements, right? Which is that, oh, you do realize you can cook food before eating raw meat. Yeah, and you could explore space on the holodeck. Or things like, oh, you do realize you can install an indoor toilet. Yeah, and you could explore space on the holodeck. These are complete non sequiturs, and they sometimes ramp this up whenever they have some ye oldie kind of techno guy that's a bit angry about the way that the world has progressed, a bit like Picard's brother. And I always find them so cheap and so silly.
Ah, you heard that, people. That came from Dr. James Roberts, who thinks that Wesley's door going is just fine. I'm going to do that every time. You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a D&D podcast. I might do that the next time we record. See if anybody gets it. Okay, anyway. Let's see. Okay, maybe you could figure out why I have this, James. Number 23.
Okay.
James says we should skip the Captain Janeway panel. Okay, James
Excuse
says
me?
I don't know. James says we should record 3 days in a row. No problem. James says we should go over the cliff together. Okie dokie, wait, I get it. So in other words, am I trying to say, I'm asking myself this as if I don't know, that Locarno said this is what we're going to do and the other three just like sheep going over the edge?
Yeah, this is the bit where Bear Boothby tells them that you know, they view these guys as gods, and in particular the you know, Locarno is the father, best friend, captain, and everything rolled up into one, and they would jump off the cliff for him, a bit like everyone would do for Janeway, I suppose.
Of course they would. Yes, but we didn't skip the Janeway panel, did we?
I don't know.
I don't remember if we saw Kate Mulgrew speak or not. I want to say we did.
We did. We did. We did.
I'm because, sure we did.
Yeah, we did. We saw her.
Good. Okay.
But we might have come in late.
Right. Yeah, that's possible. So despite Wesley's request for everyone to stay out of it, Data and Geordi still analyze everything and determine that Wesley opened his gas tank at some point to let a little gas spill out and ignite it to do a thrilling demonstration. At least that's what Captain Picard figures out. That's exactly what they were trying to do.
And the problem that I had with this is that I don't quite see what the upside is, because this is how I think this is going to happen. Either there's an accident and someone dies and the guy gets arrested, or nothing happens and there's a lively explosion, at which point the guy gets thrown out of the academy. I mean, surely there aren't going to be that many captains that are going to want to take someone that's so negligent as to perform this. And surely they're not going to allow Locarno to graduate. I mean, it's not as if, hey, I'm infamous, I did something crazy. you know, they can still prevent you graduating, right?
Well, no. Picard said he was going to graduate a living legend.
Yeah, but that's silly. That's like, okay, so...
Yeah, but they wouldn't... I mean, these are also people on the command track. Would you really want someone on a command track who's that reckless with the lives of their fellow officers? Yeah. And also, it's pretty naive and stupid of them to think that they could perform something like this inside the solar system and it not be picked up by some sensor somewhere.
Right. Yes. Or Starfleet, they could have just dismantled Nova Squadron completely. Okay. So anyway.
Well, I think that's how Red Squad comes about, right?
Oh, God. Red Squad.
I think Red Squad comes about because Ronald D. Moore couldn't get the ending he wanted on this one, so he did Red Squad.
Maybe.
God, I can't stand Red Squad. Wait till we get there.
Red Squad is absolutely excellent.
Oh, I can't wait to get there now.
Save it.
Okay, we'll see about that. Colin, remind us in about 4 years when we get to that one.
That's
okay?
Optimistic.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you have to remind us. So yeah, anyway,
after taking 6 weeks to do this episode, that's very optimistic.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, hey, you got to admit one thing, Colin. There are a lot of podcasts, if they have guests on, hey, we're recording on this day. If you're not there, too bad, so sad, bye-bye. At least, you know, we'll wait on for you.
Yeah, and we'll wait for people who don't turn up as well.
That's right. Yeah, what he means by that, folks, is about 3 weeks ago, I just plumb forgot. Plumb forgot. Okay, so anyway. So Picard calls Wesley to the ship and does his Perry Mason moment and slaps it down. What is this? That's a culvert starburst. So, yeah, I refuse to answer. Ooh, yeah, that was good.
And I like how Picard's not putting up with any of this, like, you know, quasi-legal nonsense, right? It's like, you know, yes, what do you mean you refuse to answer? You have answered. You've already given your testimony. You didn't bring this forward. This is clearly important. And Picard slaps Wesley down so well. I absolutely love this. And the only thing in my mind is that I think Picard's a little bit soft on him. I think he kind of allows him to redeem himself. Whereas mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure that like season one, season two Picard would have. You know, Picard is doing very well, but he is fundamentally still a softie. And even when Wesley leaves it to the very last second to volunteer the information, I would imagine season one Picard would have been up there immediately, you know, calling for Wesley to be hung by the, you know, hung there and then in the briefing room.
But do you think in the end, if they had a mark on their permanent records, this meeting is adjourned, do you think Picard would have stood up and said, "Hold it, Admiral, there's actually more that you need to know," or would he have let it go?
No, he must. I think, of course, he would have come forward. He must have come forward.
James, are you in the kitchen?
I am. I told you that before we started.
Oh, I just can hear the microwave in the background.
It's not a microwave. It's the unfortunately, oven. It's not the oven.
Stove.
It's not. It's the... I'll tell you what it is. It's not a secret. It's the dishwasher. The dishwasher has finished. It has been rumbling in the background somewhat, but now it has finished, and it's just telling me that it's finished. So it's gone beep,
that's
beep,
it.
Beep.
That's a very well-trained dishwasher.
Yes, it is.
It is. But the thing is, I don't understand why it needs to beep, because it has a light on it that used to be red and now is off. That's enough information I need to tell me that the dishwasher's finished.
Well, if you're in the same room, you can't see the light.
Yeah,
but things I don't think it's critically important for you to know at the exact moment when the dishwasher finishes. I think knowing whether it has reached the state of finished is enough. So, especially
that makes
when
sense.
Interfering with my podcast.
It's a bit like Schrodinger's cat. You don't know if the dishes are open until you open the door.
There you go.
No, well, hang on. I wouldn't say that.
Oh boy, here we go. Well, I have an induction oven or induction stove, which is the reason why I asked that. It's because when when you have something laying on the button, it beeps at you to say, hey, stupid, get that off my button. But that's a different story altogether. So, okay. So, the next day, they get their sentence. It's going to be a formal reprimand, but no more flying. They don't get to fly anymore. But they get to go on with their lives. Ding-ding! Okay, so at this point, we had a discussion, and hopefully this doesn't go too long, but I want to know, which one of us said he did the wrong thing? Because I thought he did the right thing.
So who's he? Wesley.
You want to know Wesley?
Wesley did the right thing. Okay,
no, we did
so
the wrong
go.
Thing.
Why?
Because wrong thinking what? The wrong thinking not telling the truth?
Right. I mean, no, you said he did the
he
wrong thing
did
because
wrong
he would have got away
telling
with it.
The truth.
Oh, no, no.
Just because you're going to get away with something doesn't mean you make it the right decision.
Okay, so you and I are actually on the same page because he did the right thing by standing up and finally telling the truth of what happened. James, what about you?
Okay, so this is where we deviate because I don't think he had a choice in this. So I don't think he had the option not to tell the truth. So the thing is that Picard stacks everything so against him that, you know, it's like, I mean, Lou, you've spoken before about you being in the security business, right? And, you know, someone says, no, I didn't steal this. And then you come along with evidence and you provide documents and evidence or a videotape. And then he goes, actually, yeah, I did take it. Is that guy really admitting? Or is it just that the evidence is so overwhelming that he has a shred of, you know, a shred of dignity left that he can't stand up with and say a barefaced lie? So I liken that more to, you know, I think that Wesley, he did the right thing, but he really had no choice in this matter. He had to do that because he's not getting away with it one way or the other. And if anything, he's taken the, by being the guy that stands up and it not being called out by Picard 10 minutes later, he has at least a chance of saving his career rather than having it completely destroyed. Because I don't think there's any remote possibility that Picard comes forward with evidence that fits. And they go, oh, yeah, Picard. And they pat him on the head and tell him to shove his theories. I don't think that happens.
But, however, when somebody steals something and you got the video of them putting it in their hands and pocketing it, that's different. Picard has a theory. Just like McConnell said, he has a theory. He has no evidence. So that he can tell him what he thinks happened.
They have photographic evidence, right?
Yeah. They have photographic evidence.
They don't actually have photographic evidence of the accident. They have photographic evidence that there wasn't a diamond formation.
And that's all they have.
I think this is where we got into the argument last time, because me and James kind of thought that Wesley was forced into telling the truth.
Yeah,
think he did the right thing because he could have got away with it. Just because you can get away with something doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. Thing to do in this instance is like he's basically dissing a dead colleague and using him as a scapegoat. That's not the right thing to do. You know, you want to be a command officer. You want to command a staff. Just because you can get away with something doesn't mean it's the right thing. And if Picard had come forward and done his theory, yes, they would have said, well, it's a nice theory, but we can't prove it.
So, well, yeah. You know,
at the end of the day,
we agree that
it would have
yes.
been circumstantial evidence, as they say in court.
Exactly. But is it enough?
Yep. No, but so this is where I think we also had the disagreement in terms of what is the threshold here, what needs to be proved. And my opinion is that this isn't, I mean, despite how they phrase a lot of the stuff, this isn't a court of law. These aren't people being charged with criminal activities. This is an internal investigation for a particular club, for want of a better word. And I think that there's, you know, they're clearly being obstructive. They're clearly hiding something, and they clearly had someone die on their watch through, at best, negligence. That's more than enough to throw them out. It's way beyond enough to throw them out of the club that is Starfleet. Now, it might not be enough in order to get them sentenced to prison for manslaughter or through causing death through dangerous shuttle crafting or whatever. But it's more than enough to get them out of the club. And that's why I fear that this idea about if Picard comes forward with a theory that fits, that is very, very tight, that explains a lot of these unanswered questions, they're not going to basically go with that in absence of anything else that there can be proposed, because they have they've got nothing to rebut that kind of claim. You know, you can say, well, I'm not going to say anything, and technically you can't lose in the court of law. Fine, but we're not in a court of law here. And I think that the evidence that the theory that would be presented by Picard is more than enough to get them thrown out of the Academy for good.
Okay. That makes sense, yes. Okay. Alright, well then. I guess that's pretty much it for us, right? Is there anything else I missed?
Okay, two things from my side. So, could you believe, am I the only person having trouble here believing that someone at Starfleet Academy would really need help with their statistical mechanics? I mean, do they just let anyone into this thing?
Well, maybe he cheated on the entrance exam.
Maybe.
Can I just point out, I have no idea what statistical mechanics are.
I know. It doesn't matter. I'm just having a bit of a giggle internally, that's all.
Statistically speaking, auto mechanics make less money than doctors of mathematics, statistically speaking.
Yeah, that's not quite what it's about either. But it doesn't
No, of
matter.
Course not. Number two.
I've told you the wife has her PhD in statistical mechanics, right?
Oh, no, you didn't. I know she had a PhD because I kept calling her Mrs. Dr. Roberts.
Yeah, Mrs. Dr. And that's I think, legitimately correct.
Well, it was actually kind of snarkyism, but it's funny that you say that. She is a doctor, you know.
Actually, can I say, by the way, she was really happy the other day because she got royalties on her book that comes through. So she's technically, she's published a book, and we got a check through for like £190 or so. The other day,
nice.
Because of the stuff that she's managed to sell. So if anyone is out there looking for a book on the statistical mechanical approach of analyzing biological networks, then, well, technically, I suppose I could give you a free copy, but but I'd prefer you to go to your local bookshop and buy one.
What's it called again? I'm sorry.
I actually don't exactly know the title. I can find the title. I'll find the title while we're doing the summary. The other thing I was going to mention is that they have this discussion between Paris and Crusher, and a bit about the point where he said, look, you know, you're the person that has a problem with this. I don't have a problem with this, so you should resign your commission. And then Crusher does. He says, well, what about the duty to the truth? And then Paris says, well, what about the duty to your friends? And then I mentioned this last time, and Crusher kind of goes, oh yeah, I suppose that's a good point. So it's not a good point at all. You know, duty to your friends is important, but it's less important than duty to the truth. And I don't know why that was such a hard concept for both Locarno and Crusher to grasp. It's clearly less important than that. And, you know, less important than duty to your friends is maybe duty to, I don't know, to a clean living environment, and duty to, I don't know, a well-organized bookshelf. You know, just because you have a duty to one thing, it doesn't mean that it can't be outranked by a duty to something else. Anyway, that's all I've got.
Statistical mechanics is the branch of theoretical physics that uses probability theory to average the behavior of a mechanical system, and is used to study the thermodynamic behavior of large systems.
Yeah, so basically,
I can see why you struggled with that.
So basically what it gets into is that you need to start making if you think about like classical mechanics, the idea behind that is that you model each body, each particle as a one thing. So if you have like the moon going around the sun, or you know, a person shooting a bullet or so, you've got a small number of elements that are involved in all of the interactions. And what you end up with in certain circumstances when you're looking at thermodynamics or any of that stuff, you start having to, you can't model every single individual particle, but instead you model the properties of the ensemble, so the properties of the entire state, and you do it on a probabilistic basis. And if you do it like that, you can you can get results that are applicable. And in my wife's particular instance, is that you can also model things like interactions on protein networks in the same way. You're not going to model, so if you're talking about like cancer drugs and stuff like that and what theoretical interactions that they would have, you wouldn't be modeling it on a cell by cell basis. You'd be modeling it on through statistical mechanics as a way of analyzing the ensemble of the interactions. And anyway, if anyone does want to pick up the Generating Random Networks and Graphs by my wife, you can find that on Amazon.
Lou, does your brain hurt?
But I'm sorry, what?
Does your brain hurt after that?
Yeah, he lost me at Will.
Yeah, that's all right, as long as it's not just my brain that's hurting.
Yeah, no, yeah, I had to tune out everything after Will. I'm kidding. But what's the name of the book, though?
Generating Random Networks and Graphs.
Oh, so would they use that in Starfleet Academy then to map where the ship might be when it comes out of warp?
I doubt it.
I just wonder why you'd need it as a command officer.
No, but things that that's so the idea in this particular case of the idea in the particular case of the, what my wife has done in her book is it's important within the biological sciences to understand how certain networks react and what are the key features of the network that lead it to react in that way. So the idea of generating the random ones is not in order to analyze what has happened, but it is in order to encapsulate certain characteristics of the network that are potentially special. So the idea behind it is that if you have like a protein network, if you have something like that, that's just a big collection of atoms, if you ask yourself the question, is why is this one lethal to you but the other one not lethal to you, it's very unlikely to be you're lethal to this one particular network. It's much more likely that it's going to be lethal because it has certain characteristics that are shared that are unique across many different networks. So the idea of generating the random ones allows you to basically analyze those properties in a controlled way.
Ah, that's what a teacher at the academy.
Everybody got that?
Yeah.
Good. Anyway, okay, I see it. I finally found it because I'm looking up the book by the name I have for her on Facebook, not the name I have for that they have for her as the author. So now I got it.
Sorry, what? So who has?
Okay,
what are you talking about on Facebook?
On why? Facebook, I have your wife as why a friend.
You, why are you friends with that. My wife on Facebook?
I really didn't want to say anything. You know?
I think we're going to have a serious discussion here because I'm not even friends with my wife on Facebook because I'm not on Facebook.
Mm. There's a picture of you with her. She's got her head right next to you. It does
kind of help to be on Facebook, James, if you want to be friends with your wife on Facebook. It's kind of a prerequisite.
I see.
Yeah, there's the link to your wife's Facebook page.
Thanks. That's nice.
But anyway, so I was looking up by the name that's on her Facebook page, not the name that's on the book. So, but I finally found it. Okay.
No, that's because it's what it, she that she I'm outraged. She appears to be on Facebook under her maiden name.
Oh no!
Anyway, Star Trek.
Dissing the Roberts name, is she? Star Trek. Oh yeah. Okay. So anyway. All right, so enough time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. And I forgot to make up some final thoughts, so I'm going to let Colin go first while I think of a few.
Okay, I actually like this episode. I think it's a good moral episode where we have to make a moral decision at the end. The alternate endings, I don't think would have worked. And if you want to know what the alternate endings are, then go to Memory Alpha and scroll all the way down on the episode page, and I'll tell you them there. it's obviously filmed over an extended period of time because there's a few continuity errors, like when Picard's talking to Boothby. Boothby's voice as he talks, he's, the air coming out of his face is misting. When Picard talks, it doesn't. So they obviously talk different times. I didn't get the low-tech room at the start of the
movie. How's that low-tech? God, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, please.
In the food chair, you're like, you know, you've actually got to open a door.
Yeah, but it goes.
Yeah, that's just Lou. No one else hears that. Only Lou hears that.
I bet as soon as you play it again, you're going to go, oh, no, I'm not going to get that out of my head.
Yeah, I probably will, but hopefully I won't have to watch it. I won't watch this episode for a while after watching it three times in 6 weeks. But yeah, it's also good that some of these characters do come back in later episodes. And it's also nice to see Picard. He's not the only man in Starfleet that's bold. So, yeah, overall, very enjoyable episode. I cannot remember what I gave it last time, but I would give this a 4.
I think that's correct. I think that's what you gave it last time.
You are correct, sir. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Wait, back up. Let's go to first duty. No, it wasn't. You gave it a 3 last time.
So it's got better. It thinks that the first duty is obviously like wine. It becomes better with age.
Oh, do you want to get together and redo this in about 6 more weeks and see if it gets
God,
to
no.
a 5?
No, we've got an episode to do 5. In the next 6 weeks. So.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, I'm going to just do mine real quick. I just made up a couple things. I do like it. It is a good episode. And, you know, what do? Do we tell the truth or do we get away with it? And I still maintain that, just like she says, we believe that you have lied to us, but we cannot prove that you have lied to us. Therefore, we have no choice but to end this inquiry and you get a bad boy mark on your record. That's the end. Ding, ding. Until Wesley steps up and gives the truth, which he should have done in the beginning, but he finally comes through. He did the right thing, and like Colin said, Sito does come back, and I think she completely redeems herself in a future episode, which we'll get to in about 2 years. So I'm sticking with my 3 because, that's what I had, and I'm sticking with 3. Doc, what about you?
3 sounds low. This is certainly like a 4 out of 5, if not, you know, pushing at least halfway up the 4 scale in my mind. I really like this episode. I think that it's got a good story behind it. I think that Picard's takedown is absolutely perfect, and he's completely right on the money in terms of what how someone should act that is put in that position. I think the writing is extremely good, and I think that as I mentioned a number of times, the guest characters really kind of carry this episode. It's very nice to see Wesley in this particular story because it's a complicated. Little wrinkle on his character development that I think makes Wesley a better person, a better written character from this point going forward. So I really do enjoy it. I think that, you know, perhaps when I was younger, I would consider this episode a bit slow, you know, not has a huge amount of action and things like that. But I'm actually very impressed by the writing and the performances, and it's enough of a good story to keep me entertained for the 45 minutes. So 4 out of 5 from me, 2 thumbs up.
All right, that's what you had, 4 out of 5. So
I'm consistent, if nothing else.
Yes, that was a good job. All right, so Colin, let's see when I have you again. Looks like for the next phase. Oh wait. Yeah, looks like you're going to be ending out the season here in about 2 months.
Well, I'm off next week, so I'm available all next week.
if we rush.
Yeah, well, we may have to, James, you know, to get him on. Okay, yeah, I think I could be too, so I'll get my next week's schedule Saturday, so I'll let you know. All right, then. Thank you for joining us, Colin, for round two of the first duty.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
A clash between generations.
I hate him.
Triggers an escape into fantasy.
My little warrior wants to see more out of life than just fighting, eh?
But a parasite invades the Enterprise.
Is it big enough to cause a threat?
And Worf and his son are trapped in its path of destruction.
There won't be a ship left to reach the Polaris field.
Life signs are failing.
Primary power systems are going down.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
So everyone, join us next time as we review episode 20, and that's going to be Cost of Living. I don't know who we're going to have on for that at this point. I do have it listed as Brian Dedamore, but he actually is now the proud grandpapa of a baby twin, boy and girl, so he's got a lot going on with his daughter, helping her out, so we're not sure what Brian's status is, so I'll send him an email today. All right, so everyone, take care and good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay, let's see what happens.